Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. If you are a regular listener, why not plan to visit Beth Emmanuel in beautiful Hudson, Wisconsin for one of the holidays? Join us in the fall for Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, or Sukkot, or come visit in the springtime and spend Passover or Shavuot with us. All the holidays are special at Beth Emmanuel. You can contact us to request details by clicking on the Contact tab on our website. And remember to support Beth Emmanuel with your prayers and financial gifts.
Yeah, I'm just having one of those mornings. Afternoon, no. You ever have a bad day? I mean, not saying that this is a bad day. This is the Holy Sabbath. But you ever have one of those bad days when you should have just stayed in bed? It's just like, oh, man. Well, actually, no, you haven't. Because in Judaism, in Messianic Judaism, we do not have bad days. No, we do not. We do not have bad days because every day it says, this is the day that the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Am I right about this? I think so. So we do not have bad days. Day after day, blessed is the name of the Lord, day by day, right? So you don't have a bad day. And it says, today, if you hear his voice, right? And that, when is it today? It's always today. So we do not have bad day after day. He burdens us with blessings. So we do not have bad days in Judaism. So there's no such thing as a bad day. However, there are some days which are substantially better than others, and some days rank very poorly when compared with the typical good day. So we'll just say that some good days are not as good as other good days. And one of those poorly ranking days, in my opinion, is Tisha B'Av. If there ever was a good day that wasn't quite so good, it's the ninth day of the month of Av. Yes, and you know why. I mean, it all started, as our Torah portion said this week, with the story of the 12 spies. This was our parsha this week. Moses is recounting it. The story of the 12 spies, 10 were bad, 2 were good, 10 gave a bad report on the land of Israel, the good land of Israel, gave this bad report on the good land, on the very, very good land, convinced the nation that Hashem was not going to deliver to, they didn't have the power, they didn't have the strength, the Canaanites are strong, they should just go back to Egypt, forget the whole thing, just forget it. Let's go back to Egypt. This was a bad idea. This was a bad plan, Moses. And so they refused to obey Hashem, and the Lord punishes them with 40 years in the wilderness. When did this happen? It happened on the ninth day of the month of Av. Yes, and so that's why this is a, you know, not the best day, because it's the anniversary. We're coming up on Monday night. The anniversary of the day that the children of Israel rejected the good land that the Lord was giving to them, that he had promised to their fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They went into 40 years of wandering in the wilderness corresponding to the exile. Then it happened in the days of the prophet Jeremiah, 586 BCE. The Babylonians burned the temple, the holy temple of God, the house of God, the place where the Lord chose to put his name. They burned it. They burned it to the ground. It burned for 2 days, the ninth and the tenth day of Av. What a coincidence. Everybody thought, well, that's a coincidence. It's an amazing coincidence. This just happens to be the anniversary of the day that we rejected the land of Israel, that we refused, that our fathers refused to go in the land of Israel. It just so happens by coincidence that this is the day in which the temple was destroyed. And then it happened many generations later in the days of the apostles in the year 70 Common Era that the Romans burned the temple on this date, that they set fire to the holy temple and destroyed the temple. And this was really, you know, marks the beginning of the current exile, the beginning of this current exile, just as in the days of Jeremiah, it marked the beginning of the Babylonian exile. And everybody said, well, that's a coincidence. Josephus, the Jewish historian, says, well, that was coincidental. This happened to be the anniversary of the day on which the temple was destroyed the first time by the Babylonians, as if there was some divine hand of providence arranging these things. And then it happened a generation and a half later, maybe two generations later, in the days of the rebel hero Shimon Bar Koziva, Bar Kokhba, the Bar Kokhba revolt, that the last great stronghold of the Bar Kokhba revolt that the Romans could not seem to conquer was the city of Bitar, and the last holdout of the revolution. And it fell, and on what day do you think it fell? It fell on the ninth day of the month of Av. A year later, the Romans began their reconstruction of Jerusalem as a Roman city, a pagan city, a city dedicated to the gods of Rome under the name Aelia Capitoline, and they began by plowing the Temple Mount over, marking out where the temple of the idol would stand. And on what day did they plow it? On the ninth day of the month of Av. So it turns out, this turns out to be one of those days, just one of those days where you should have stayed in bed. The nation should have stayed in bed, I guess. The first crusade officially commenced on August 15, 1096, which is in the month of Av, in the neighborhood of the month of Av, if not on the 9th of Av. And you know, this is a grand total of more than a million Jewish people were killed in this crusade. And we, lots of other things, like lots of other events throughout history, like the expulsion from England happened 9th of Av in the year 1290. The expulsion from France happened on the 10th of Av in 1306. And in 1492, the year of Columbus, sailing the ocean, right? He set out from Spain, and the Jewish people also set out from Spain. In the month of Av, 1492. Germany entered World War I on the 9th of Av in 1914, bringing a massive upheaval in European Jewry, whose aftermath brought us into World War II, and the Holocaust. Speaking of the Holocaust, Heinrich Himmler of the SS formally received approval from the Nazi Party for the Final Solution in 1941, on the ninth day of the month of Av. And on, of course, 1942, a year later, the deportation of the Warsaw Ghetto began on the ninth day of the month of Av. And so all of these things start stacking up. You know, you start to think, yeah, there is something going on here. There's something happening here. So most religious communities, most Jewish communities use the ninth day of Av not just as a commemoration of the destruction of the temple, but a commemoration of all of the evils and the trials of exile, including a remembrance of the Holocaust, a remembrance of the 6 million Jewish people who perished in the Holocaust. And in fact, you know, there's a day on the calendar called Holocaust Memorial Day, which strangely, I mean, just this is just an aside, strangely appears in the month of Nisan, which is completely inappropriate from a halakhic point of view. The month of Nisan is the month of Passover. It's the month of liberation, and it's not set aside for mourning. It's not a time of mourning. And so from a halakhic point of view, that's a strange place to put a memorial for the Holocaust. So most traditionalist Jewish people remember the Holocaust on the ninth day of Av. It's sort of like the Orthodox Holocaust Remembrance Day, I guess you could say. There's one other significant event that Jewish tradition assigns to this day that I'd like to talk to you about today, and that is the birth of the Messiah. Yeah, which is kind of strange. The birth of the Messiah. Which doesn't seem like, it doesn't seem like the same, it falls in the same category of sad events that we remember on the ninth day of Av. So I think, maybe I'm going to read you a legend about the birth of Messiah from the Talmud. And I have to give you a caveat before I do this. Most, Christian readers, New Testament readers might feel put off by this legend that I'm going to read to you because it contradicts what we know about the real birth of the Messiah. So let's just get that out in the beginning here, like before we even get into the legend. Where do we learn about the birth of the Messiah? We learn about the birth of Messiah in the book of Matthew, in the Gospel of Matthew, and in the Gospel of Luke. We know how it went down, okay? We're not challenging any of that or anything like that. Instead, we're going to look at a Talmudic version from the Jerusalem Talmud. A Talmudic version, a legend about the birth of Messiah, has nothing to do with the Gospels. Okay, this is just a totally different... We're just looking at something completely different. So in other words, we're just going to suspend our disbelief. You know, that's how you have to watch television or whatever. You have to suspend your disbelief just long enough to enjoy it and see if we can learn a little bit. And in the legend that I'm going to read to you, the name of the Messiah is Menachem, which is and here's the thing, he's born, as you will see, on Tisha B'Av. Okay, ready? It's clear enough. Not the gospel I'm going to be reading to you. Okay, all right. Okay. Rabbi Yudin, the son of Rabbi Ivu, said, "An incident happened to a certain Jew who was standing and plowing his field. His ox lowed before him. An Arab passed by and heard the sound of the ox. He said to him, 'Son of Judah, son of Judah, untie your ox, unfasten your plow, for the temple has just been destroyed.'" What does this mean? So this Arab, that would be a Nabataean, who's passing by, this Jewish farmer who's plowing with his ox. He hears the ox makes a strange sound. So it's a very ox-like sound. To the Jewish guy, it just sounds like the ox made an ox sound, but the Nabataean speaks ox. So he hears what the ox says, and he realizes the ox prophetically has just announced the destruction of the temple. So he tells the Jewish guy, he says, "Hey, you know what? It's inappropriate for you to keep plowing your field on this day because your holy temple has just been destroyed. It's the ninth day of Av in the year 70 Common Era." All right. So the Jewish fellow is untying his ox. And it says, the ox lowed a second time. So the ox says something else. And then the Arab fellow says, "Son of Judah, Jew, tie your ox and fasten your plow, for King Messiah has been born." So, in other words, he speaks Nabataean, he hears the ox say, you know, whatever the ox says, this time, a second time, but the ox says something different. He says in ox, "King Messiah has just been born." So he translates this for the Jewish fellow, he hooks his plow back up. You know, now it's a happy day. It was a sad day, and now it's a happy day. So he asks him, the Jewish fellow asks him, "What is his name? What is King Messiah's name?" And the Arab answered, "Menachem." He asked him, "What is his father's name?" The Arab answered, "Hezekiah." He asked him, "From where is he?" He answered, "From Birat Malka of Bethlehem of Judah." So it's a suburb of Bethlehem, the area around Bethlehem. So the Jewish fellow went and sold his ox and sold his plow, and he used the money to become a seller of infants' clothing. So he has a plan. He's going to go find King Messiah. He went from town to town until he came to that place, in Bethlehem. All the women bought clothes for their babies, but the mother of Menachem did not come out. Then he heard the women saying, "Mother of Menachem, come, buy clothes for your son." She said, "I wish to strangle the enemies of Israel, for on the day on which he was born, the temple was destroyed." Now this is an unhappy woman, unhappy mother. When it says, "I wish to strangle the enemies of Israel," this is a euphemism, most scholars say. This is a euphemism for saying something worse. She actually, what she's meaning to express is, I wish my son would be strangled. Which is, why? Well, because on the day he was born, the temple was destroyed. So I wish he would be strangled along with the enemies of Israel. She considers her son to be an omen of the destruction of the temple and therefore in league with the enemies of Israel. The man said to her, "Well, we can be sure that if the temple was destroyed because of his coming, it will be rebuilt with his coming." Then she said to him, "I have not a penny to buy clothes."
He says to her, "What does that matter to me? Come and buy. If you have no money today, I'll return and get it another day." So he's willing to sell her infant's clothing for King Messiah on credit. Several days later, he returned to the town and asked her, "How is your baby doing now?" And she answered, "Since you last saw me, winds and storms came and snatched him from my hands." Which is the end of the story. It's the end of the story. Strange little story, don't you think? I like it. I mean, even though I don't take this legend literally, and I'm not suggesting that this is really how things went down or anything like that, and we know that our master was born not on Tisha B'Av of the year 70 Common Era, but rather he was born some, what would we say, 76 years before that. You know, so it was quite a while before that, 76 years earlier. You know, so I'm not suggesting that we should take this literally. Not at all. Instead, I like the symbolic value of this legend. I think it's very significant for us. The legend indicates a desire on the part of the sages to bring the Messiah into the Second Temple era before the destruction of the temple, even if it's on the last day. As the prophets, particularly the prophet Daniel, had indicated. We read in Daniel chapter 9, it says, "The Messiah will be cut off and have nothing, and the people of the prince who is to come will destroy the city and the sanctuary." So you need to have the Messiah before the destruction of the temple, according to the prophet Daniel. There's many other prophecies as well, which indicate a correlation between the coming of the Messiah and the Second Temple era. So if the temple is destroyed and Messiah is not here, this is what the Talmud has in mind when it says, all the appointed times for the Messiah to come have passed. So the sages would like to see the prophets vindicated by bringing the Messiah before the destruction of the temple. All right, that's in my opinion, that's the reason the legend exists in the first place. But you don't have to take it literally, right? And we're all okay with that. So, but just think, what if it was literal? Then, I mean, if the Messiah really was born on Tisha B'Av, well, then you know what? It would be a Tisha B'Av. Everyone would be telling you on Tisha B'Av, be of good cheer, because it's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest season of all, with those holiday greetings and gay happy meetings when friends come to call. It's the holly jolly, you know, and so forth. So it's, you know, I think it could work. But one reason that I really like this legend is that it disqualifies a common objection to Yeshua as the Messiah. You might be thinking, well, how so? But hear me out. I've often seen anti-missionary books that point out that Yeshua of Nazareth cannot possibly be the Messiah because rather than rebuild the temple was still standing in his day. And in fact, it was destroyed shortly after his life. And one of the jobs of the Messiah, one of the job descriptions of the Messiah, is he's supposed to come and build the temple. Instead, he shows up and what happens? The temple is destroyed. So he's like the opposite of what the Messiah is supposed to be, right? So rather than building the temple or even establishing it as an eternal temple of the Messianic era, like the prophets say, the temple's destroyed. If not because of him, at least he did not prevent it from happening, and if it was truly the Messiah, he could have at least done that much. So that's maybe you've never thought of that, but that's a common anti-missionary objective. This is one of the reasons Jewish people, generally speaking, have reservations about Yeshua of Nazareth being a potential candidate for Messiah. And it's, you know, sounds like a fairly reasonable objection. Well, we believe that when our master comes again, that is, a second time, he will rebuild the temple, just as the prophets say, and just as he himself said, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will build it up again. 3 days. Well, 3 days. 3 days as, you know, as God counts days, but you get the idea. So we're saying, no, your objection's invalid. He's going to do that. He's going to build the temple. But the anti-missionaries object to this first coming, second coming idea. And they say, look, anyone could make that claim. Maybe I'm the Messiah. Maybe when I come again, I'll build the temple. I mean, anybody could claim to be the Messiah and claim that they are going to come again and bring the redemption, the final redemption, at the time of the second coming.
Okay, that seems like a reasonable objection as well. But to make that claim credible, you would also need to rise from the dead, don't you think? As our master did before his ascension.
But admittedly, I'll give you that it does sound a little bit dubious to say, okay, well, we realize, you know, he hasn't done the Messiah stuff yet, but he's going to in the future. Sounds a little bit dubious.
But is it so dubious and artificial so as to be outside the bounds of Jewish interpretation, eschatology, or expectation?
No. On the contrary, we find the Talmudic legend about the birth of Messiah suggests something very, very similar. So the legend places the birth of the Messiah at the end of the Second Temple era, a timing which is consistent with our messianic faith that Yeshua of Nazareth was active in Judea and Galilee during the last generation before the destruction of the temple. And we notice how the Talmud connects the destruction of the temple with the birth of the Messiah, and it connects the rebuilding of the temple with his reappearing. This idea is also consistent with what we're teaching. In the end of the Talmudic legend, what happens to the Messiah? Winds from heaven come and snatch him away. Snatch away the infant Messiah and conceal him then. He's concealed until the day of the final redemption.
We too believe that the Messiah ascended to heaven in like similar manner to be hidden away and will one day return.
So this legend, you know, this legend actually is on our side, so to speak, in terms of this argument. And you might have noticed already that it has some similarity to a passage in the book of Revelation that I frequently cite from Revelation chapter 12, where the Messiah is born. You know, the Messiah is born of the woman, but then the dragon comes and makes war on the woman. And it says, and the dragon represents Rome, the woman represents Israel. It says in Revelation, she gave birth to a son, a male child, who is to rule the nations with a rod of iron. That's the Messiah. And her child was caught up to God and to his throne. So in both the Talmud and the book of Revelation, the mother of the Messiah, symbolizing Israel, is having trouble with Rome, right? Having trouble with the enemies of Israel, and her child is caught up to God and to the throne. In the Talmudic legend, the destruction of the temple leaves the nation of Israel, the mother, so distraught, so upset, that she cannot rejoice over the birth of this son. In fact, she resents him. She wishes he was dead. The mother resents her own child. In the Talmudic story, this mother then represents the nation of Israel, spurning the consolation of Hashem. Maybe I'm pushing this analogy a little bit too far. I don't think so. Remember, in my opinion, the story is not literal. Rather, it's about the messianic hope. It's not literally how it went down, but the truth that it's conveying is all about this messianic hope. So now we have a situation very similar to where, you know, the nation as a whole, the nation generally speaking, spurns this Messiah. You have two characters in this story, two main characters. There's the peddler. We'll forget about the Nabataean. The peddler, the farmer plowing with the ox, who becomes a peddler of infant's clothing, and then the mother of Menachem. And the story is really about the contrast between these two characters, the two different attitudes we see. And, of course, the significant, we never see, we actually never, the child himself is never in the story, he's just talked about. It's significant that his name is Menachem ben Hizkiyahu, Menachem the son of Hezekiah. Son of Hezekiah indicates he's from the Davidic line. He's from the house of David, right? But why Menachem? Well, what does Menachem mean? Consolation. He is the consolation. So next week, for example, when we get past the fast day of Tisha B'Av, we're going to open the Haftarah portion to Isaiah chapter 40. We're going to read those words, comfort ye my people. And Monday night, when we read the book of Lamentations, we're going to read the passage that says, she looked for a comforter, but there was none. You know, Jerusalem, look for a comforter. Menachem is a title for this. Consolation is a title for Messiah. In the Gospel of Luke, he's called the consolation of Jerusalem, the consolation of Zion. So these two characters, the mother and the peddler, and their respective attitudes towards this consolation. The mother of Menachem, the mother of the Messiah, can be compared to the 10 spies. The 10 spies who see the kingdom and they it's a tragedy. They see only tragedy, right? Ruin. It's like, you know, this kind of personality, like, you know, it hits some obstacle, some difficulty, some disappointment, some heartbreak, and it's just like, I'm ruined. There's no point now. Don't even try to console me. There's no point. It's over. Forget it. I might as well die. I might as well be dead now. You know, this is a certain personality type. No reason to go on. This sort of thing, right? Maybe you know someone like this. Why bother? Right? Why bother? Why bother with faith? Why bother with God? You know, God, he disappointed me. You know, this kind of, it's a dead end. Everything is a dead end. Maybe you know someone like this, right? But then there's this other person, this peddler, this farmer who becomes, he sells his ox and his plow. When he hears the Messiah's been born, he sells his ox and his plow. He does whatever I'm going to find this Messiah. I'm going to find this consolation. The temple's been destroyed, but I am going to find this ray of hope, this consolation. And he sells his ox and his plow, and he uses the money to go find that treasure hidden in a field by, you know, he's like, oh, here's what I'll do. I'll become a peddler of infants' clothing. I'll go from town to town until I find this promise. This guy can be compared to Joshua and Caleb, you know, who see the positive, see the power of Hashem, say, surely the Lord can deliver us. Surely God has, you know, God has the power to bring us into this land. He has the power to defeat these Canaanites. It's going to be awesome. We're going to see the salvation of God. So it's the same day. Tisha B'Av is the exact same day. The 9th of Av is the same day on which the 10 spies gave their evil report. And on the day in which Joshua and Caleb gave their good report. It was the exact same day. So, is the destruction of the temple the end of everything? Or is it the beginning of everything? One sees it as an end. It's the end. There's no point. It's over. It's only darkness. It's only exile from here on out. One sees it as the beginning of redemption. That surely, if this great tragedy has befallen us and the Messiah has been born, this is the Messiah, this can only be up from here. It can only go up from here. And this is the meaning of the story, I believe. You know, there's a saying I've told you a few times before. There's a saying that says, before Hashem inflicts the wound, he gives us the cure. He gives us before he inflicts the wound, he gives us the cure for the malady. Well, before the destruction of the temple, he gave us the cure. And the cure is King Messiah, who will rebuild the temple. It's the same idea as we're reading in the Talmud here. It's not that it's literally the way it went down. I mean, I personally like to think that the Messiah was born on Sukkot. You know, if I have to choose a significant date, I'm going to put him on the first day of Sukkot as his birth. But the idea, the theological idea, is the same. It's one of hope. So you see, it's a very similar story to the death of the Messiah. I mean, if you can imagine, as we heard from the Haftarah, we read the Gospel during the Haftarah this morning, we heard the story of the crucifixion, the death of Yeshua, his burial,
gospel portion ended in darkness, ended with the tomb being closed and the collapse of the messianic hope that his disciples had invested their lives into. It's over. What's the point? There's no point anymore. We thought, the two on the road to Emmaus said, we thought he was going to be the one to redeem Israel. We thought, but look, this is the end. Dashed hopes. Why bother? No point. Why go on? And on that day, it must have been difficult to see, 3 days later, on the third day, 3 days later, difficult to say that hope was born on the cross, that hope was born at the time of crucifixion. Doesn't look like it whatsoever. Doesn't look like hope is born in the flames that consumed the holy temple. But what did our master say? Destroy this temple, and in 3 days, I'll raise it up again. So, I mean, this is like a lesson you can take. You can look at the big theological lesson, or you can just take this home. And just take this home for your own life. And for the, I know you're dealing with stuff. Most people are. You're dealing with stuff. We all deal with stuff. And so you can ask yourself in every situation, what do I see here? Do I see the destruction of the temple, or do I see the birth of the Messiah? Do I see the crucifixion, or do I see the resurrection? The hope of the gospel transforms even our worst days to days of hope, to the beginning of redemption. So that even the worst disaster is just the beginning of redemption. Even the worst things, the worst darkness, becomes a seed of hope, a new beginning, a new start that leads to redemption. Tisha B'Av was the first step to the final redemption. Remember that bad day? You know, you wake up, you're having a bad day, it's an awful day, what an awful, how bad is it? This is a beautiful principle that we learn. A life-changing principle to live by. And here's how the prophet Zechariah expresses it. The fast of the fourth month, the fast of the fifth month, which is Tisha B'Av, the fast of the seventh month, and the fast of the tenth month, all of these fast days, which throughout the liturgical year are connected with the destruction of Jerusalem, the fall of the temple, the burning of the temple, and the exile of the Jewish people. All these fast days will become joy, gladness, and cheerful feasts for the house of Judah. So love truth and peace.
Take on my yoke and learn from me and find rest for your soul.